Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. I have come to know and greatly admire a man who is in the thick of it on Capitol Hill at the moment. He is Representative Jody Heiss. He represents the people of the 10th District of Georgia with great distinction. He serves as the vice chairman of the Subcommittee on Government Operations of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, and he is also a member of the House Committee on Natural Resources. He's involved in more congressional caucuses than you can literally shake a stick at, a very busy fellow, and it's greatly appreciated that he's taking some time with us. Congressman, you're one of the few members I know who have, among your other distinctions, a pastoral doctorate. So I know you've been ministering to a lot of us for a long time, and thank you very much for taking a few minutes to talk with us about some of your good works.
Well, Frank, thank you so much. It's an honor to be on the air with you.
Great. Well, let's talk about some of the things that you've been doing, Congressman. You joined several of your colleagues in a piece in Fox News recently about the need to investigate the investigators. And this is a passion of mine. I really have been incredibly frustrated, as I gather you have, that the investigations have seemingly been very, very narrowly focused and are missing some of the really important things that need to be exposed as well. Could you talk a little bit about what you think those are?
Yeah, you know, as soon as this special counsel was put in place, I had some red flags going up. The relationship between Mueller and Comey was such that this smelled like a rat from the very beginning. And sure enough, it appears that that's the direction it's going. This is a witch hunt. It's all about trying to take down the president, to harm him. And I'm just fearful, and have been from the very beginning, that it would turn into this. So Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan, and myself, we had an op-ed that recently went out that you're referring to to address this. And as you said, basically we're saying it's time to investigate the investigators. This thing is going down the wrong path. They're surrounding themselves with Democrat activists, really. And you know, the American people, we deserve equality and justice under the law. This is shaping up to be anything but justice, and the cards are stacked, and that's the intention of it. And we want to put an end to it.
Especially when you look, Congressman, at the genesis of this special counsel business, it was explicitly stated under oath by James Comey to the Senate Intelligence Committee that he had engineered this by the leaking of documents, some of which we're told may be classified, but in any event, that it was his purpose to bring about a special counsel, and lo and behold, it turns out to be one of his best friends.
Right. He has a friend to leak FBI documents to the New York Times for the purpose of creating a special counsel. And then that special counsel happens to be Robert Mueller, who's a great friend of his, and now Mueller is surrounding himself with Democrat activists who and powerhouse attorneys, all for the purpose of going after the president. And look, we tried, just for example, back in 2014, the House tried to get a special counsel when the IRS was targeting conservatives and conservative organizations. You and many others will remember that. We sought to get a special counsel, and we were denied by Comey and Holder from being able to do that. And yet here, with under oath people testifying that there's been no collusion, the president did not try to coerce anything. I mean, all under oath, the evidence here, and yet out of the blue, we have a special counsel right after Comey was fired by the president as director of the FBI. That's when all this stuff is coming forward. So it is just an obvious distraction and an obvious attempt to take down the president was taking place here.
Hey, you know, one other aspect of this, Congressman Jody Heiss, that it would seem to me is also sort of within the ambit of what you're describing here is the failure to focus on people who may have engaged in collusion with the Russians, as the phrase goes, who just don't happen to be associated with Donald Trump or his campaign, namely the president of the United States, his predecessor, Barack Obama, and Hillary Clinton, of course, former Secretary of State and his rival in the last election, as you know. There's a great deal more evidence of collusion on the part of these folks, and yet somehow the investigations, the investigators are looking the other way. They're not interested in following these stories. And one of my personal favorites is this this example of Skolkovo, a sort of Silicon Valley that Hillary Clinton apparently engineered as a huge part of her pay-for-play scheme. Do you think that these sorts of issues should be part of these investigations, not simply very narrowly and to their exclusion, the much less documented, if in fact real, charges of collusion by the Trump team?
Oh, absolutely they should be. They should be. The question is, will they be? And the fact is, I mean, look, even Comey admitted himself that he was willing, under the direction of Attorney General Lynch, to not refer to the Clinton investigation for what it was, not to call it an investigation, but to call it a matter. I mean, there's collusion right there, not to be honest and mislead the American people. We have Hillary destroying thousands of emails. I mean, yeah, I mean, this goes on and on and on, and absolutely these things ought to be part of the investigation. But in reality, I'm fearful they're not going to be, because this thing is set up with a bunch of attorneys who have contributed to Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, the Obama administration, on and on and on and on. And in fact, some of these have been attorneys for Clinton who are now part of the special counsel team. And so to answer your question, yes, absolutely these things ought to be part of the investigation, but I'm very doubtful that they will be. This is being set up to take down the president, not to deal with the true potential collusion and criminal potential activity of previous administration.
Congressman, you recently voted for two pieces of legislation. I just want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about those as well that are important. They seem, as is generally the case, not to be making much headway in the United States Senate at the moment. One deals with sanctuary cities. The other is known as Kate's Law, involving illegal immigrants and violent criminals at that among them. Could you talk about those two pieces of legislation and why we should be seeing action on them by both sides of Capitol Hill?
Absolutely. One of them was the No Sanctuary for Criminals Act. And I think most Americans are disgusted with the fact that we have cities in this country that are willing to give safe havens to people who are here in this country illegally, and for many of them who are criminals. And like, why in the world would we tolerate cities being sanctuary cities for criminals? And so that particular piece that you're referring to, it just strengthens current law. It's an attempt to try to stop some of these sanctuary cities that really are trying to shield and protect criminals who are in this country illegally. So we're trying to give more power back to law enforcement and immigration enforcement to deal with those types of things. And then the other you referred to, Kate's Law, of course, a horrible example where an individual was murdered by an illegal individual who is here in this country. And that particular law simply is going to allow individuals even the right to even sue, or the sanctuary city, they can sue the sanctuary cities. But this one, Kate's Law, is going after these individuals who are committing violent felonies in this country, strengthening the laws, strengthening the punishment, the penalties for those individuals. And I have some legislation myself trying to go after individuals committing crimes. Like, for example, did you realize that if an illegal individual in this country commits a sex crime, once they serve time, they are released back onto our streets, and they're not even put on the National Sex Offender Registry. anyone else to commit the sex crime, they have to go on the sex offender registry. Not so if you're an illegal in this country. And so we, personally, I have a bill trying to address that problem. But we've got to deal with the illegals in this country who are committing crimes. And part of that equation are sanctuary cities. So that is what we've been working on lately.
We'll be talking a little bit more about that with Mark Krikorian momentarily, but I wanted to say thank you very much for your leadership in these many, many important matters, and I hope you'll come back to us again very soon.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We're joined by Mark Krikorian, an outsized contributor to the national debate and, I think, to the security of the American people through the extraordinarily important work he does at his organization, the Center for Immigration Studies. He is its executive director. He has been extraordinarily effective, in my view, on, in particular, the host of issues that arise as a result of illegal immigration into the United States, the lack of enforcement of our immigration laws. It's always a pleasure to catch up with him, and we're doing so on vacation, no less. Mark Krikorian, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to join us.
Glad to be here.
Let me ask you, Mark, first of all, we were talking a moment ago with Congressman Jody Heiss about the sanctuary cities. I was listening this morning to National Public Radio lauding the mayor of Denver, Colorado, for essentially hiding illegal aliens from the immigration authorities. This is part of, I guess, the larger sanctuary cities operation that he runs out there. He declined to call it that, actually, interestingly enough. But what are we to make of what is being done by these local officials to frustrate and, in fact, obstruct the enforcement of immigration laws inside the United States?
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing this kind of thing all over the country. There was a story a few months ago about a local judge who helped an illegal immigrant go out the back door of the courthouse because ICE was, you know, waiting for him to take him into custody. I mean, it really is outrageous. And what I think this is the result of is that much of the left has now come to see illegal immigrants as a kind of protected class, like, a racial minority or something like that, and that therefore, you know, they are justified in essentially in breaking the law to protect them. I mean, it really is a remarkable development on the left that they have become so extreme, really just in the past decade on this issue. Because when you see, for instance, the videos, remember, of Bill Clinton, one of his State of the Union addresses, he was basically giving a Donald Trump speech on immigration. It's a sign of how radicalized the Democrats have become on immigration. And it's bad for the country, but I think it's also bad for the Democratic Party, because even though people will disagree about certain aspects of immigration, the radicalism of the left now, mainstream left on immigration, is really out of touch with much of the public.
Mark, you followed these issues very closely for years. I've been encouraged to believe that there seems to be a correlation between the change that you've just described in the Democratic Party and the change that preceded it on the part of organized labor, which had long held that these individuals were, you know, a menace and were supposed to be kept out, and then flipped when essentially the left, the hard left, took over the trade union movement, and suddenly the Democratic Party, which is largely in their thrall, flipped as well. Is that fair, do you think?
Oh, no, I think it's definitely a part of it. I mean, the organized labor, which, and look, I'm a conservative, and I have my own issues with the conduct of organized labor, but on the immigration issue, they were always at the forefront of defending American sovereignty. Even back in the 1986 bill that people remember, the big amnesty that Reagan signed, it was the AFL-CIO that was fighting it and fighting for tougher immigration controls. They were the lead on that issue. And basically, I think what happened is that the top layers, the top elements of organized labor, not the regular union members in the field, but the management, looked at their numbers and they said, look, Americans have given up on us, so we're giving up on America. We're just importing somebody else to belong to our union because Americans don't want to do it anymore. And that really did, I think, help move. It was both caused by the left radicalism or radicalization on immigration, but it helped promote that radicalization even further.
Mark, let me ask you to speak about one other piece of what's happening in this regard. The idea that illegal aliens have been encouraged to apply to become members of the United States military in the expectation that they might become citizens of the United States by so doing. This is a program called Military Accessions Vital to the National Interest, or MAVNI. That wasn't the original intent of it, but it seems to have given rise to real concerns about who's coming in through that program, to the point where the Pentagon has decided to put it on ice for the time being. What's the state of play on that as you understand it?
Yes, MAVNI was a limited program that had, you know, that would have good justification. What it was supposed to be for is to enable legal foreigners who were not immigrants, in other words, people who are on foreign student visas or exchange programs, some kind of lawful program that was not a green card, because people with green cards can enlist under certain circumstances, but only if those legal foreigners had particular skills that were really useful. In other words, they spoke an unusual language, Pashto or something like that, or they had some other unique skill. What the pro-illegal immigration people have been trying to turn it into is a way to get people with this illegal immigrants who have this temporary DACA amnesty that Obama illegally enacted on his own, to get them into the military. In other words, it's a kind of camel's nose under the tent strategy. And there's really no excuse for it. I mean, it turned what could have been and was a very limited, potentially useful program into kind of the little wedge of a crowbar for amnesty, if they can.
Speaking of DACA, there's an effort underway, as you know very well, Mark, to try to terminate this, something that President Trump said on the campaign trail he would do right out of the gate, as I recall. Where are we on that?
Well, I mean, first of all, this is now July, and the president said he was going to end DACA on day one. So where we are is the program is continuing on autopilot. They're not only renewing people for this two-year amnesty that Obama just made up out of whole cloth, but they're actually signing up new people. They're expanding the program. It's outrageous. And so there are indications now that they may end up, they may be willing to end it, but they're worried about the PR aspects of taking away work permits from what are, frankly, sympathetic young people, who most of whom really haven't grown up here. The Secretary of Homeland Security was pressed on the issue, and he said, you know, if there's a lawsuit challenging the legality of the program, because there is one in the works, but the litigation hasn't really started, he said, if there is, you know, a lawsuit, he said he, you know, probably would not be able to defend the program in court, suggesting that the administration may want the courts to kind of do the job for them, so that if the federal courts say, look, this program isn't legal, then the administration will be able to say, look, our hands are tied. The courts have spoken, and we have to end this program. So maybe that's their strategy. I hope so, because it really is an outrageous abuse of executive power left over from the Obama administration.
Mark Krikorian, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Thank you so much for taking some time from your vacation. Well-deserved. Your work, as I say, at the Center for Immigration Studies is really, really appreciated by all of us here at Secure Freedom Radio. I look forward to continuing our conversation about it when you get home. In the meantime, stay well, my friend. Next up, Adam Credo of the Washington Free Beacon joins us. We'll talk about, among other things, about the Iranians building missiles in Syria, what that might mean for the region, perhaps for us. Stay ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and I'm very pleased to say we're joined by Adam Credo, one of the very, very impressive writers and journalists and investigators reporting for the Washington Free Beacon. He previously was a reporter for the Washington Jewish Week. His acumen on so many of the really important stories of our time and his ability to help the rest of us understand them has been extraordinary, and I'm really appreciative of him taking a few minutes to talk about some of this reporting that he's been doing of late. Adam, welcome back. It's so good to have you.
It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Let me give you as an example of a really important bit of reporting, one of the ones you filed this week about Iran and the fact that it's now building some of the missiles that are increasingly threatening all of us in Syria. Talk about what's being done there and in whose company.
Sure. Well, essentially what we're seeing is the Iranians joined by their friends, the Russians and the North Koreans in Syria, building ballistic missiles, opening up their own factory. Now, this doesn't only help just Bashar al-Assad and the rebels there. These ballistic missiles obviously can be used by Iran across the rest of the region. They're adding it to their already extremely large, I think they have the largest ballistic missile cache in the region, so they're adding it there. But I think it says also something very important about Iran's continued rogue behavior. We had the Iran deal that was supposed to touch on Iran's rogue activity, such as ballistic missiles. UN resolutions call upon them to cease this activity, yet they continue to do it unimpeded with no repercussions. And I think this is very much a wake-up call for the U.S. What are we going to do here to respond?
Is there any evidence that we're thinking about even taking this issue up, let alone responding effectively, Adam Credo?
Yeah, the problematic answer is no. This administration has been very clear that Iran policy is being subject to an interagency review right now. And necessarily, that's an advance by them that they have no Iran policy. See, now, look, they've done good things like target Iran in Syria, where Iran is trying to attack U.S. coalition forces. But still, until the day the administration says the review is over and here's our policy, they're effectively admitting that they have no Iran policy, and that is very, very dangerous right now.
I wonder, to what extent, Adam, would you say that the Iran policy, such as it is being subordinated to other interests, notably the preoccupation with trying to finish off the Islamic State in both Iraq and Syria? And to that extent, we're actually watching the United States government providing, air forces for the Iranian-backed Iraqi militia, for example, as they essentially destroy a number of Sunni cities that have fallen under control of the Islamic State in the process of liberating them.
Yeah, I think you raise a very important point, and it's one that people don't often pay enough attention to. On one hand, we have the Iranians and Russians and Hezbollah in Syria launching direct attacks on U.S. forces, that is drone strikes, missile strikes, militants encroaching on U.S. positions. Yet on the other hand, the U.S. is effectively backing Iranian forces in Iraq, and it's a very schizophrenic policy. But the net of all of this, of not having a comprehensive policy, is empowering Iran. Again, when the U.S. is not taking a leadership and strong role and saying quite clearly what they believe about Iran's rogue activities in the region, that net benefit is Iran wins.
Which is not a good thing for our interests, let alone those of our friends and allies, especially Israel, which may well be subjected to some of the product of this facility in Syria that the Iranians and their friends are building ever increasingly capable weapons in, especially since one of the principal beneficiaries of their armaments is Hezbollah, which is already, as you know, Adam Credo, armed to the teeth. Hey, let me switch gears quickly, Adam. We had another really important story that you provided about the Senate Homeland Security Committee's analysis of the extraordinary phenomenon of leaks coming out of the Trump administration, the vast majority of which seemed designed to hurt the administration. And it turns out, according to your reporting and the committee's analysis, hurt the national security in the process. Talk a little bit about both the magnitude of this phenomenon and its implications.
It's certainly unprecedented, and it's something I've been reporting on for many months now since the Trump administration came into office. And the Senate report appears to certainly confirm most of the things that I had been hearing from the sources I'd spoken to. We're looking at least one leak a day of national security information harmful to the Trump administration. Now, here's why this is one, unprecedented, and two, extremely important. The sheer volume, that is just the number of these leaks, was much, much, much smaller under both the Obama and Bush administrations. They came nowhere near this amount of leaks around their time in office as where Trump is at this point. The second issue is that these leaks are not about informing the public. Look, as a reporter, I like leaks. I like when people provide me information that is important to tell people about. But that's not what this is. This is the weaponization of national security. They're leaking often incomplete information or information that is completely about tarnishing the administration, or net result, quite honestly, is that this has impacted U.S. operations. The nature and the scope of the leak have become much more serious in the last several weeks. We've seen them go from really dirt about individuals, that is negative information about individuals, to very serious classified information about U.S. operations, with the Israelis when their operations were exposed, and that actually caused quite a rift. So what we're seeing really is not about informing the public, it's about harming Trump, and those leaking the information have absolutely zero regard for the danger that they're doing to U.S. national security operations that our allies are conducting, like we said, the Israelis. And I think it's not going to stop anytime until the Trump administration gets its act together and works to clear out a lot of these Obama administration holdovers that still remain in government.
Yeah. You've also reported that Congressman Ron DeSantis, who chairs the National Security Subcommittee of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, has decided to call this out and look into who's responsible for it. Where does that investigation stand as you understand it, Adam? And is this a necessary step towards ending this practice as well as you see it?
It actually is, I think, because DeSantis has moved beyond just saying, hey, leaks are a problem, we need to address them. And he's really started to get into the specifics. And I certainly heard it in the course of my reporting, but many are not willing to go on record and publicly state their position on what exactly is happening. And that's where I think DeSantis's role on the National Security Subcommittee is very important. He's saying, look, what we have here is a combination of Obama administration holdovers still in the government and their friends on the outside. Those are individuals such as Ben Rhodes, the man who created that echo chamber to mislead America about the Iran deal. These are individuals like Colin Kahl, Joe Biden's national security advisor, and also a national security advisor to Obama. Individuals like this still have friends in government. Essentially, and certainly in DeSantis's view, they're leaking damaging information to the New York Times, the Washington Post, in an effort to undermine the Trump administration. And it's a combination of the individuals on the inside of the administration and the outside of the administration, very simply, doing their best to leak damaging information. So DeSantis's view, let's haul these people in front of the House Intel Committee and question them about what they're up to.
What a splendid idea. A little congressional oversight. It seems highly needed and hopefully will not be much missing indeed and much longer delayed. Adam Credo of the Washington Free Beacon, thank you so much for taking some time to talk about the important stories you're covering and to share with us the kinds of things that, if we don't get right, are going to be really harmful to the national security of the United States. Keep up that good work, my friend. Come back to us again very soon. Next up, we'll speak with my friend and colleague Fred Flights about some of this, specifically what we must be doing about counterintelligence in this dangerous time. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Fred Flights, my friend and colleague at the Center for Security Policy, our Senior Vice President for Policy and Programs, who has been a very, very valuable contributor to the public policy debate in that capacity, but also to our national security in a series of important positions he held over the years in the United States government, including as a Central Intelligence Agency analyst for about 20 years, as the chief of staff to Ambassador John Bolton in the State Department, and as a professional staff member of the House Intelligence Committee. He is the author of Obama Bomb, A Dangerous and Growing National Security Fraud. Fred, good to have you back. Welcome.
Good to be here, Frank.
You've been writing of late about a couple of things that are of particular interest to us. One is the question of what Donald Trump should do about North Korea. You have been warning for many years in your various incarnations about the inexorable march of that regime towards the day that's now at hand, which is that it has the capability to actually use nuclear weapons against the United States delivered over long ranges, presumably by ballistic missiles.
Well, some people think that the North Korean nuclear program, the threat has been overrated because it's just to extract concessions from the U.S. and for regime survival. But I don't think that argument stands any longer. I think we have to realize that there is an aggressive purpose of this arsenal, and it will be used one day, and that if it continues on its current trajectory, there will be war, there will be conflict. And that's why I'm counseling, and there are others who are coming out saying this too, it is crucial that this president not kick this problem down the road like previous presidents and take aggressive action. I don't necessarily mean military action. We can get to that later. But take as aggressive action as possible to get this resolved. And I think that this action has to start by putting a fairly extreme pressure on North Korea that also pressures China and makes its support of North Korea untenable.
And specifically, do you have in mind a certain set of actions against, for example, the Chinese banks, perhaps as a means of getting leverage on both them and on the North Koreans?
Yes, I favor sanctions on Chinese banks. I also favor sanctions that China has been vetoing against North Korea for the past 25 years, such as stopping North Korean ships at sea and searching them, not just searching them when the ships happen to come into a port. I'm talking about shooting down North Korean missiles that leave North Korean territory. I think there should be pretty strict sanctions, not just on Chinese banks, but denying North Korea access to global finance. And we have to do things that change the security calculus in Asia. Much stronger missile defenses, which China is going to hate, and there has to be a significant increase in the nuclear deterrent in the region, including returning nuclear weapons to South Korea, which were removed by the George H.W. Bush administration in 1991. We need to do things so China realizes that its support for North Korea is creating a security situation that China is not going to want to tolerate.
Fred, just quickly on one of those, I spoke of this the other day with another of our guests and was discouraged from talking about this. I think it was the Proliferation Security Initiative that you worked with Ambassador Bolton in the Bush administration, and the opportunity that it might afford us to stop North Korean vessels on the high seas, as you say. Give us a sense of the legal inhibitions on doing that, especially if the Chinese are likely to be displeased.
Well, the Proliferation Security Initiative is a way we should go around the United Nations to put sanctions against North Korea that China has been vetoing, China and Russia. So we definitely have to do that. There's over 100 nations in it. We have been leading it. It fell into abeyance under Obama. Let's do that. The State Department determined during the George W. Bush administration that we could not stop ships at sea. That was a bad decision. It was made by careerists who did not like President Bush. Frankly, I think we have to make it clear that because of the dire threat from North Korea, we are going to do this. And this was a close call during the George W. Bush administration. The call was wrong, and I think this is something we definitely have to start doing.
Yeah. National security depends on it. I think there's no question about it, given the nature of the North Korean regime and the fact, as you know so well, Fred Flights, that one of their very few cash crops for export are weapons, and their collaboration with the Iranians, the Chinese and others, Russia's, makes this a very, very perilous problem indeed. Let me ask you, speaking of China, Fred, the Washington Free Beacon and the Washington Times, under the byline of our friend Bill Gertz, reported earlier this week that there are now some 25,000 Chinese espionage agents, spies, perhaps another 10,000 that are part of their larger apparatus. And that doesn't take into account, I think, the number of students and Confucius Institute personnel and so on. As a career intelligence professional, Fred Flights, I wanted to get your sense of what the magnitude of that is in terms of a counterintelligence problem for this country.
I think it's a severe problem. That story didn't surprise me. I think China has a very aggressive foreign intelligence operation targeting our economy, our security, our power grid, our infrastructure. I think this has been going on for a long time. It is not a new discovery. It is not simply a threat to the United States. This is also a big problem in Europe and in Japan. It is an enormous problem. And I think countering is going to be extremely difficult. I think that, let me give you a short story. I once visited a nuclear lab in New Mexico, and one of the staffers there had a badge while we were being talked, where we were discussing sensitive WMD technology, citizen of India. There were also citizens of China at this lab. And I think we really have to do a lot to protect our security from China abusing access to this country to infiltrate it with intelligence agents.
Yeah, I remember a former Secretary of Energy, a notorious individual, Hazel O'Leary, once being very concerned that if we actually gave badges to those Chinese nationals and the like at the national laboratories that suggested they were going to be treated differently than Americans, that might give offense to them. I mean, the whole thing is just incredibly screwed up. Hey, Fred, let me ask you about something else quickly. I know you have been tracking the various developments, the to-ing and fro-ing, I guess is the charitable way to describe it, in the Trump administration over what to do about the deal, the Obama bomb deal, as you described it in your terrific book. What is the latest on certification of compliance with that deal by the Iranians?
Well, there was recently a letter sent by Senator Rubio and Cruz and two other senators urging the Trump administration not to declare Iran in compliance with the nuclear deal by the next 90-day deadline of due to Congress on July 17th. I don't know how it's going to come out, but I know conservatives are making it clear the president has to live up to his campaign promise to substantially renegotiate or kill this agreement. And there are people who support the agreement. They are also lining up, trying to get the president not to pull out or to say he'll renegotiate it. Europe is pressuring him. I am hoping the administration will do the right thing and by the 17th or sometime this month, make it clear this treaty is not, or this, not a treaty, this agreement is not in the interest of the United States, and we're going to kill it or renegotiate it.
Yeah, you could actually say not even this agreement, because after all, an agreement suggests that there was something written down that is signed by the parties. And that, of course, is not true of the Obama bomb deal. Fred Flights, thank you so much for your time today, as well as for the incredible expertise you bring to all of these topics. Please follow Fred Flights' terrific work at National Review Online and Newsmax, and, of course, at the Center for Security Policy as well, securefreedom.org. Fred, keep it up and come back to us again very soon. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.